All right. Good morning, everybody. Today is Monday, August 31st, 2015. And this is Before the First Cup of Jewels here on UCY.TV. Oh, it's Monday. Oh, I hate Monday so badly. And yes, just like in good Monday form, everything here is working like it is on syrup. I don't know. I now am utilizing right this second to do the show today. Three, count them, yes, one, two, three computers to be able to just get articles to load. Let's not even attempt videos. They've been dying very slowly as the weekend's gone on, and my ability to play videos is completely out of window now. Listening to streaming audio was touch and go yesterday. But at least I could still open articles. Well, now we have sparse articles open across three different machines, and maybe with three computers we can get through the show today. What on earth is going on? You mean to tell me that there's too much data on some web page with words on it that I don't have a big enough internet pipe to open it? Okay, I'll believe that one. You know, and it's amazing because things like Facebook or Skype surveillance tools stay open and connected. Not a problem. I can surf around and go all within Facebook and visit every anti-establishment post that's out there. Click on it and give it my thumbs up to add that one to my dossier as well. But to go outside of any of the, I don't even know what they're calling them now. I mean, yes, they're surveillance tools, but they really are looking at making some of these tools portals to the network, portals to the system. On Friday, we titled the show, and hold on, there we go. We titled the show Before the First Cup of Jewels, Ted Kaczynski and Bill Joy. Technological takeover, and that's pretty much what it was all about, was the machine, the system, how the system has sprouted out of technology to be the controlling net that has dropped down upon us. And yes, we see this every single day, but maybe what we didn't realize is how intellectuals, people in the know, technologists back from 15, 20, 25 years ago, had already seen this coming. And those of us in the industry, the next generation of system builders, never knew about that when the first generation of system builders were just releasing the system out of the universities. Had I known about some of Kaczynski's work, I might have questioned a little bit more what I had put my entire heart and soul into for 25 years, helping to create the machine with the promise of it being this utopian future. I don't know why I thought it was going to be like Buck Rogers, but I did. I did. I still believed that those puppeteers pulling the strings were good puppeteers. The only conspiracy theory that I was aware of, that I thought that the government was hiding information back in those days, remember, because the X-Files was on, it groomed our perception, was UFOs. And now I'm not, I don't even think, honestly, if they've ever been here, they probably ran away screaming. I think any, you know, a couple friends of mine, I was always a diehard, you know, prove UFOs exist way back when. But I'm telling you right now, when I look at the stuff now and I know what I know about Operation Paperclip and Antarctica and, you know, some of the experimentation that was going on during World War II, I am pretty certain that most of what has been seen is ours. And even down to abductions, people, what we know now about human experimentation that has been going on by the federal government and the citizens of this country for at least a generation or two, from what we know now and some of the horrific things that they've done to people without their knowledge, I wouldn't doubt in any way, shape, or form that quote-unquote abduction stories we're in another crazy way, A, doing some sort of MK Ultra experiment, mind control experiment, right? Sounds pretty likely. And B, a good way for plausible deniability and to hide it. Let everyone start worrying about and sounding crazy talking about the aliens from outer space abducting them. And in the meantime, Big Pharma, Project Paperclip, testing mad science gone mad on humans. Hey, go do a few alien abductions. There you go. Step on that lonely highway over there and make the helicopter fly out of the sky. EMP pulse their car and wear your alien Halloween costume. They'll go willingly, trust me. And you know what? It'll be pretty funny to watch the reactions and make some notes of it. I don't know, guys. I'm just saying, for all that and all the stuff that I looked into and everything that we've learned now about the control system, I almost think that it could absolutely have been a probability. All right. So where do we continue today? Well, let's see. On Friday, yes, Ted Kaczynski and Bill Joy, Technological Takeover. We looked at some of Kaczynski's manifesto denouncing technology in the system and his reasons for stating we needed to get outside of the system. And then Bill Joy back in 2000, it was an archive out of Wired magazine called Why the Future Doesn't Need Us. And Bill Joy was right on the money. I mean, he had spent many, many years in technology building some of the beginnings. He was one of the co-founders of Sun Microsystems, a very bright guy, programmer. He was the father of Java or JavaScript. I don't remember which one, but one of them. Very, very bright guy. But when he started looking down the future timelines, and we've talked about this before, he started seeing some real dangers in the fact that there are no ethics and there are no stops in the system. And as we've dug in daily to this technology, we've discovered some even more disturbing things. And that is that pretty much not only our entire federal government is on board, but with this bioeconomy blueprint, the federal government has managed now to sprinkle federal dollars at not only our higher learning institutions, but corporations here in the U.S. and abroad. Other countries, we heard Ron from Game On also talking a couple weeks ago about the bioeconomy blueprint up in Canada. And I believe they have something very similar going on in Australia as well. This science, and maybe it was Hal Anthony this weekend, you know, I heard a few people, we're all on the same page. And technology, for as much as they are convincing us with that dopamine carrot that we should be in love with our cell phones and our convenience devices, they are those same very devices that not only are enslaving us now, but that are going to be our controller's connection to us, even more so than they are now in the future. Weird sovereign tech, too. He started talking about the armed drones this weekend. I think it was Ron again on his Sunday show this week. He was talking about the new ruling class of priests, or maybe that was Hal, being the doctors, the scientists, the technology people. Technology has taken on a God-like stance where the knowledge right now is so complicated. And I mean, remember when computers started, everybody was completely flabbergasted. They didn't understand anything. And only the most technical of technical people knew how to build a computer or what went inside or how it worked, or even how to use Windows. You know, when Windows 3.1 and 3.11 was around, you had to need to know how to use DOS and some command line. There was no dumb and user-friendly. Well, now, as computers have rolled out and we've had Moore's Law exponentially improving the number of transistors that we can put onto a chip in the same small space that has now given us computing power faster than most of us would ever need, the ability to calculate huge amounts of data in small periods of time has grown to that level where we have just about enough. And I think Bill Joy had even said in that story on Friday, and that was from 2000, that within the next few years he believed that we would have enough computing power to create an entity like Ray Kurzweil was discussing, you know, being able to upload a consciousness. And I've seen science specials over the last year or so, more propaganda on science TV or whatever the channel's called, and they're spinning that transhumanism agenda every chance they get. But they were already spinning the idea that our universe could potentially be just a big hologram running in somebody's supercomputer. And as we see things such as the White House coming out with the supercomputing initiative and talking about how all these genomics, we're not going to have enough storage and brain power. We got to invest in the machine. We got to invest in making things faster. We got to invest in being able to keep you healthy and keep you safe with all of this new technological medicine. And you know what? You got to be in the database, because regardless of what hospital or what doctor you've gone to, we'll be able to know, Johnny, if you are allergic to strawberries. It's for your own good. But what's happening is, as science is becoming religion, and whoever said this weekend about the science priest, thank you, because it really made me start thinking. As science starts to become the new religion, we end up with exactly what we're seeing now. People who refuse to look at any of the real science behind things such as vaccines, because the doctors and the controllers tell you that it is to keep you safe. We've been doing vaccines for 50 or more years, and what makes you any different? But what they don't understand is that the technology today is way different than the technology of vaccines 50 years ago. And I mean, neither of them were good. We find out about the SV40 and all those messed up things that they were putting in. People shedding polio 30 years later. Maybe we'll look at that tomorrow. I wasn't doing any vaccine today. I want to look at brain stuff today. But I mean, you know, the CDC, we find out with a whistleblower coming out, the representative out of Florida to Congress, with documentation showing that the CDC hid the connection between the MMR vaccine and autism after the Wakefield study had been eviscerated. This would have changed the game on vaccines had that come out at the time. Had they not played their propaganda and stabbed someone in the back and tried to completely discredit their research, which they do time and time again. They've done the same with GMOs. I just saw some new horrific GMO study. I don't remember. The rats aged and died very quickly eating mega doses of like GMO soy. And of course, they're saying that that's all mumbo jumbo voodoo science, and don't believe what the independent researchers are saying, because science has become a religion. Don't listen to the non-believers or the heretics. And it's frightening when you look back through history. When I was in college, I was getting my English degree and I was going to continue on. I really wanted to be a female Indiana Jones, and my bachelor's degree was in literature. I focused on religious studies. Medieval literature was my first one, and then basically religious studies, creation and destruction myths throughout history. That's what I spent a lot of time on. And I continued in school. My master's degree, my thesis, was going to be built around how beliefs, simple beliefs, but belief systems in particular, religions, had caused more death, bloodshed, and destruction than any other cause throughout human history. And I mean, we had holy wars, so you can't just really compare them to wars. But you also had people being burned at the stake for their beliefs. You know, look at what's going on right now in the Muslim religion. Let's behead more people for unclean thoughts. Religious belief, radical belief, belief in something that you feel very strongly about, that you're motivated to believe. And especially when they're dangling stuff that looks like proof to you, but you, guess what? Don't have enough mental capacity to completely, fully understand what they're dangling at you, the scientific paper, let's say. So it starts to look like magic. This is like the sorcerers, the priest magician of the past, like Merlin back in King Arthur's days. You know, that type of mumbo jumbo science makes religion. But these people, this literally is going to become a holy war, I believe. Science versus non-science. And you know, here's the thing, getting back to the machine. To be against the machine is not to be anti-science. I am 100% for all new discoveries, things that'll make the world a better place, things that'll make us healthier, better. But there's no ethics involved right now. There's nobody watching the store. Mad science gone mad, upside down and sideways from one corner of the globe to the other. With nobody verifying or double checking, it's like the Tower of Babel all over again. And anything they say can be manipulated as truth. Because who's going to know? Who's going to know? They could say their study showed this, and there's so many fraudulent studies out there. Who's going to be able to pick the true ones from the false ones? I mean, they have gone out of their way to make it so confusing and so difficult for anyone to prove anything, that there's always, always, always a reasonable doubt in the minds of the non-thinkers. You know what I mean? Like, they point to us and say those anti-vaxxer, tinfoil hat wearing anti-science people just are trying to ruin Johnny's vacation. They're trying to get your kids sick because they're being selfish. They're crafting this sick narrative and then pointing to people like me because I'm questioning the bullshit, because I'm questioning their profits over my child's health and safety. I'm questioning the parents that don't have two brain cells to run rub together, that are just blindly taking their kids. They're going, yes, the government is here to protect us. Inject Johnny with the newest technology, the newest fangled nanotech virus-like particle vaccine, and then make sure that you have Johnny come back every 6 months for DNA swabs and blood tests and iris scans. So you can track how he's doing. It just makes me so upset to see how this is all played out. And so in the end, it will be like Invasion of the Body Snatchers. They will be ratting us out backwards and forwards if we do not comply. So anyway, even if, we broke through to the mass majority and got them to pay attention. DARPA always has that ace of spades up their sleeve. Because one thing that we've seen that is a big part of this whole new bioeconomy, but it's been real quiet lately, is the whole brain project. And yes, the brain project. We have DARPA. We have Google. We have Microsoft. We have Motorola. We have all of our big tech giants involved. We have all the universities. We have the National Institute of Health. And we have institutions across the globe, as well as the federal government's inking of being behind this project to crack all the mysteries of the brain. It has nothing to do with Kurzweil's dream of wanting to upload himself to a computer. No! What would Kurzweil have to do with anything? Not that he's been made the head of engineering at Google. Not that Google and DARPA and the feds are in bed very closely together. They have any type of brain project of their own going on. No, no, don't worry about it. Not that DARPA's been doing huge amounts of brain research to what cure those poor veterans who ended up getting permanently brain injured while fighting for your freedoms. No. What? Some of our veterans come back with horrifying memories of blowing up women and children and have PTSD. So this brain project is going to help erase and replace those traumatic memories. So we have a treatment for you and your children of the future. So you never have to be upset again. Yes. Using what? Oh, flashes of light. Using what? Oh, remote control button pushing chemical injecting little implants in your brain. Yes. All paid for with tax dollars provided by you and me. All right, let's get to the first story. It was a good setup there, 23 minutes worth. I'm awake now. Thanks, guys. All right. Study finds. I thought this was interesting, and I'm sure this has come out of the Brain Project and the Genome Project. Study finds that people with schizophrenia have different throat bacteria. Well, Johnny, let's go to the doctor, Johnny. And you know what? Your mommy is one of those people who doesn't believe in those newfangled vaccines, but you got a sore throat, Johnny. So you know what? We don't want you to have strep throat because that can turn into rheumatic fever if it isn't treated properly. So your mom's going to take you to the doctor and get a throat culture. But what? Oh, Johnny, we regret to inform you that while doing your throat culture for streptococci, we've discovered your throat bacteria has a signature for people with schizophrenia. Yes, they now think that they will be able to diagnose mental illness by just taking a throat culture. Now, why would that be important? Well, if you've noticed, there's this big mantra. I at least have been noticing it in 2, 3, 4 different places from all these different angles now. Of being able to diagnose mental disorders, oh, from an online app, oh, from the reactions of your face as your cell phone takes pictures of you, oh, from the stress levels in your voice that they're doing with voice recognition on your phone. They are working on being able to, quote unquote, diagnose mental issues. And if anyone has been to the doctor in the last year or two, even if it's just to take your kid for the required yearly physical, you will know exactly what I'm saying when I tell you that going to the doctor, I mean, it never was fun to begin with, but honestly, I felt like every reaction, every eyebrow, every smile or not smile was being noted in the documents about our visits. And after the Sandy Hook shooting a couple years ago, Obama had even said, we got to get rid of those pesky HIPAA records. And the psychiatrist and your doctor are going to be at the front line of defense of helping to protect this nation against mental health issues. Because mental health issues, oh, they lead to crazy gunmen shooting up churches or schools or cops at gas pumps or wherever else we've had a shooting recently, universities. No, it's not the SSRIs that we've been pumping into 70% of the American public. And then we found out that SSRIs have a big reaction with suppressed cytochrome P450 enzymes, which is the metabolizing enzyme for medication in the human body. And then we didn't find out that the cytochrome P450 enzyme is suppressed in people who eat GMO foods laden or just foods that are sprayed with Roundup, glyphosate, glyphosate is suppressing the cytochrome P450 enzyme, and then they're feeding these same people these SSRIs, and the SSRIs are having an amplified effect, and they go completely wacko and then start killing people. But no, it has nothing whatsoever to do with the pharmaceutical drugs and glyphosate at all. No. All right. Well, let's get back to this. So now, as we can point to the mentally ill people, and wow, there must be so many of them out there, let's make sure we get some simple test to be able to discover who might have mental illness. All right. A small study conducted in the U.S. has found that the bacteria living in throats of schizophrenic patients were significantly different from those in healthy volunteers. And while the discovery suggests a difference in how the immune system is functioning across the schizophrenic and control groups, at this stage, scientists aren't entirely sure what this means. The role of the microbiome in schizophrenia remains largely unexplored, they report in the journal PeerJ. The microbiome, and we have done all kinds of shows about the microbiome, using that vagus nerve, your gut bacteria can directly interact with your brain. And yes, you do have literally two brains. They've also discovered that damaged microbiota in your gut can cause a whole host of maybe not mental disorders, but even something as simple as depression. Make sure you take some good probiotics, people. Keep your microbiome good and steady. The microbiome has been shown to alter brain development and modulate behavior and cognition in animals through the gut-brain connections. And research in humans suggests that it may be a modulating factor in many disorders. And, you know, they're right now, they are pouring bazillions of dollars and now trying to crack the microbiome. And when we started reading about these new nutraceutical foods, these synthetic 3D printed, healthy for you, laden with whatever you're deficient in foods, it's got to be pretty scary to you, because if they crack that microbiome that's got a direct connect to the brain, they'll be able to fully influence what you think, how you feel, just through man science synthetic nutrition. And this isn't fantasy stuff either, people. We've read about all this stuff. This is a team from George Washington University took throat swabs of 32 patients, half of which had been diagnosed with schizophrenia. And after sequencing the genomes of the bacterial colonies that were living in the throats of their volunteers, quote-unquote high-level differences were evident at both the phylum and the genus levels, they report, with proteobacteria, Firmicutes, I don't know what that one is, Firmicutes, Bacteriodetes, and actinobacteria dominating both schizophrenic patients and controls, with Ascomycota being more abundant in schizophrenic patients than the controls. They also found that the controls were playing host to a greater diversity of bacteria, and lactic acid bacteria were more abundant in the schizophrenic patients, including species of lactobacilli and bifidobacterium, which have been shown to modulate chronic inflammation. Now, that's pretty interesting, because a lot of your supplements, including yogurts, come with lactobacillus. And I've seen that bifidobacterium before. I don't know, I take stuff that has a large dose of 32 million microbiota, whatever they call them. It's kind of scary, especially where you could be ingesting this stuff and who knows what kind of difference it's going to make. As a bacteria found in our throats starts in our guts, The results fit into the increasing body of research that suggests a link between our brain function and our gut microbes. And that's not exactly surprising. 90% of the human body is made up of microorganisms, and they contain around 100 times the number of genes in the human genome, accumulatively weighing approximately the same as the human brain. Last year, researchers in Ireland also looked at how these bugs could be affecting people with schizophrenia, and results in their preclinical investigations indicated that, quote, these microbes majorly impacted our cognitive functions and fundamental behavior patterns, such as social interaction and stress management, unquote, according to the paper published in Molecular Psychiatry. We are pivotally dependent on neuroactive substances produced by such bacteria, the researcher concluded. So how could bacteria that move from our guts to our throats have an effect on our brain? Well, that's not quite clear yet. But we do know that the immune system appears to be weaker in schizophrenic patients, which could explain the difference in species in the most recent study. And recent research has shown that the bacteria living in us can have an effect on our moods. A much larger study that also analyzes bacteria taken directly from the guts of schizophrenic and healthy patients would be needed for a more definitive answer to emerge. But the study does point to the possibility of a more accurate test for schizophrenia being based on bacterial throat swabs. Yes. Get your schizophrenia diagnosis by having your throat swabbed. But, hey, don't worry about that because you won't need your throat swab. Computers, I found this weekend as well. Computers can also predict schizophrenia based upon your speech. There was a DoD application that was developed to help them diagnose and treat soldiers coming back from overseas for different disorders, namely PTSD. Well, it seems that they now have maybe taken this robot cell phone mental health disorder diagnoses and have it diagnosing schizophrenia as well. Computers can predict schizophrenia based on how a person talks. Now, that is very frightening. I would like to run my voice print through that software and see what they have to tell me. They would probably tell me I'm a complete and utter lunatic. A new study finds an algorithm. Remember, algorithms, it's how the system runs. A new study finds that an algorithmic word analysis is flawless at determining whether a person will have a psychotic episode. Again, I would love to have my voice print run through this. They're going to start using this on public figures. You wait and see to diagnose whether or not you're dangerous. All they got to do is get your voicemail or get you on a phone call. Or record you on Skype talking to someone, or open up your computer microphone that they already have the ability to do through some of their advertising, the Google advertising, Samsung. Yes, we're just listening to room noise and then advertising to whatever topic they're talking about. Yeah, but they also got your voice and your inflections and your words. All right, let's read this story. Although the language of thinking is deliberate, let me think, I have to do some thinking. The actual experience of having a thought is often passive. Ideas pop up like dandelions and thoughts occur suddenly and escape without warning. Yeah, I hate when that happens. People swim in and out of pools of thoughts in ways that can feel paradoxically mindless. But most of the time, people don't actively track the way one thought flows into the next. Oh, no. Is that how it is? But in psychiatry, much attention is paid to the intricacies of thinking. For instance, disorganized thought evidenced by disjointed patterns of speech, is considered a hallmark characteristic of schizophrenia. Several studies of at-risk youth have found that doctors are able to guess with impressive accuracy. The best predictive models hover around 79% whether or not a person will develop psychosis based on tracking that person's speech patterns in interviews. And that's just doctors. Well, it seems computers can now do it better. That's according to a study. Another one of those studies, a study published Wednesday by researchers at Columbia University, the New York State Psychiatric Institute, and who? Yes, the IBM T.J. Watson Research Center and the Nature Publishing Group journal, Schizophrenia. And here's what's interesting, too. IBM Watson has this speech-to-text application right now. I was messing around with some things, playing with it for a little while. One of the things that they have you check on or off is whether or not the speech that you're uploading to Watson is going to be allowed to be used for Watson's learning. They don't tell you what Watson's learning, but they're having people upload speech and Watson is learning from it. So it makes you wonder if they aren't scanning any speech that's uploaded, try to determine whether or not those speech patterns render them statistically with the algorithm schizophrenic. Back to the story. They use an automated speech analysis program to correctly differentiate with 100% accuracy between at-risk young people who developed psychosis over a 2.5-year period and those who did not. And the computer model also outperformed other advanced screening technologies such as biomarkers from neuroimaging and EEG recordings of brain activity. Woo! In our study, we found that minimal semantic coherence, which means the flowing of meaning from one sentence to the next, was characteristic of those young people at risk who later developed psychosis. So what? People who have trouble stringing two sentences together? That is usually a good indication that there's something not quite right there, says Guillermo Cercini, a biometaphorical computing researcher at IBM Research, in an email. It was not the average. And what this means is that over 45 minutes of interviewing, these young people had at least one occasion of a jarring disruption in meaning from one sentence to the next. So what? One episode of adult ADD jumping from one topic to the next? I could do that. It just depends on what frequency I'm running on today. Back to the story. As an interviewer, if the mind wandered briefly, I might miss it. But a computer would pick it up, and researchers use an algorithm to root out such quote-unquote jarring disruptions in otherwise ordinary speech. Their semantic analysis measured coherence and two syntactic markers of speech complexity. One, the length of a sentence, and two, how many clauses it entailed. So they're looking at how many long-running sentences you connect all together in one big long sentence. When people speak, they can speak in short, simple sentences, or they can speak in longer, more complex sentences that have clauses added that further elaborate and describe the main idea, Cicchini says. The measure of complexity and coherence are separate and not correlated with one another. However, the simple syntax and semantic incoherence do tend to aggregate together in schizophrenia. So short, disjointed sentences, apparently. Here's an example of a sentence provided by Cicchini and revised for patient confidentiality from one of the study participants who later developed psychosis. And no, well, let's read the sentence and then let's analyze it a little bit. So this is from a patient. Quote, I was always into video games. Hey, dangling dopamine carrot. I mean, I don't feel the urge to do that with this, but it would be fun, you know. So the one block thing is okay. I kind of lied, though, and I'm nervous about going back, unquote. What the hell did that mean? While the researchers concluded that language processing appears to reveal subtle clinically relevant mental state changes in emergent psychosis. Their work poses several outstanding questions. For one thing, their example sample size of 34 patients was tiny. That's true. Researchers are planning to attempt to replicate their findings using transcripts from larger cohorts of at-risk youths. And while they are also working to contextualize what their feelings might mean more broadly, we know that thought disorder is an early core feature of schizophrenia, evident before psychosis onset. What? So we have them talking about thought disorder. Guys, this is one step away from future thought crime. Let's read his quotation again. Quote, this is from the doctor. We know that thought disorder is an early core feature of schizophrenia, evident before psychosis onset. Yes. Now the way you speak will be an early telltale sign as to whether or not you're going to become a criminal in the future. You're going to become dangerous. And IBM's Watson can do it with 100% accuracy. What? We should be very afraid of this new technology, people. We need voice changers. And it's got to, like, rewrite our paragraphs before we speak them. I don't know what to even say to this. And knowing how they're surveilling all conversations, I just saw something that, yeah, it's all right now. NSA, it's NSA. They can listen to all the phone calls again and nobody cares. And you know what? We got around the legality. Don't worry about it. We're not going to release them on the internet. No, we're just going to feed them to IBM Watson's psychosis Determinator and figure out your phone number and GPS track you to laser shoot your brain and make it all better with flashes of light. And wait, because we're gonna get to that if I don't run out of time. I don't know, we might have to speed up through the story so I can get to a couple more of the stories. The main question is then, what are the brain mechanisms underlying this abnormality in language? And how might we intervene to address it and possibly improve prognosis? In any of these, this is me interjecting, any of these truth speakers, listen, they aren't listening to science or following the social paradigm. That must be a determining factor of future psychosis. I mean, this is all subjective, people. This is like, again, the Google Truth algorithm setting up a database of what the system considers to be truth and then comparing you to how or your website or your speech patterns in this case to what they determine is normal, to what they determine is truth. And if you don't fit into that little tiny mold, you're outside of the system, and anyone outside of the system isn't going to work very well. So assimilate or be eliminated. That's the end result of all this. Become a part of, I don't know, the prison industrial complex. Big pharma testing. Let's put you into a mental hospital now because we have 271 new vaccines waiting in the wings to be tested on people. And once you're in one of those settings where you're under lock and key with a large population, hey, you being unvaccinated is a danger to the herd. It is justifiable to force vaccinate in a situation like that. I don't know. I'm just postulating. But guys, this is really scary. Intervention has long been the goal. And so far, it has been an elusive one. Clinicians are already quite good at identifying people who are at increased risk of developing schizophrenia. But taking that one step farther and determining which of those people will actually end up having the illness remains a huge challenge. The computer analysis at the center didn't include any acoustic features like intonation, cadence, and volume, all characteristics which could be meaningful in interpreting a person's pattern of speaking and, by extension, their thinking. Quote, there's a deeper limitation related to our current understanding of language and how to measure the full extent of what is being expressed and communicated when other people speak to each other or write. And remember, I've talked about Google working on that unstructured speech algorithm. They've been working on that for quite a while to be able to look at things that are said in a context and determine a meaning. To be able to listen to slang and try to figure out how to decode what is being said. So I don't think it's going to be too long before this is a full-blown voice analysis system that they then can start running through their vast amounts of data that's already out there, hook another one up to all their real-time feeds, and we'll have Cyber Patrol Center at Microsoft with red lights all over. Boop, 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 boop. There's another one identified. Another one identified. Here's a map. They could start sending out their now armed drones. Not with lethal weapons. Don't worry. Don't worry. Laser guns and tasers. Only. No, more than that. Rubber bullets even. All right, let's see if we can get through a little bit more. So then I saw another story. This one's a machine like us. Light-activated learning. Whew! Pretty excited about this one. It made me think of Star Trek when Captain Kirk put on the learning helmet and all these lights started flashing and he was downloading the entire culture's history that they were visiting into his brain. A German-French team has developed a light-sensitive switch that regulates a protein implicated in the neurobiology of synaptic plasticity. The agent promises to shed new light on the phenomenon of learning, memory, and neurodegeneration. And what I wanted to mention about this was a French-German team, but there was a DARPA team working on using pulses of light as well in the brain to be able to remove and replace memories in regards to PTSD. So this isn't something new, but it's something we should be paying attention to. Learning is made possible by the fact that functional connections between nerve cells in the brain are subject to constant remodeling, and as a result of the activation-dependent modification of these links, which is the synaptic plasticity, circuits that are repeatedly stimulated learn to transmit signals ever more efficiently. That's why when you keep learning, you keep reading every day, you keep connecting the dots, your brain becomes more powerful. When you don't exercise it, it gets flabby, right? Ever go a whole summer during summer vacation when you were in school and not read a damn thing? Well, I could tell you I did, and I only did that once because when I got back to school, it was painful to get back on the train. Says this process of learning is thought to provide a molecular basis for learning and memory and allowing the information encoded in such networks to be recalled and exploited in novel situations. The primary targets for modification are these specialized receptor proteins and nerve cell membranes that mediate the transmission of electrical signals between individual neurons. A team of researchers led by Dirk Tanner, professor of chemical biology and genetics at LMU, and I'm not sure, they don't tell me which university LMU is, but somewhere probably in France or Germany, in collaboration with colleagues at the Institut Pasteur in Paris, has now synthesized a light-dependent switch that enables them to control the activity of a particular class of brain receptors, which is crucial for the formation and the storage of memories. Well, there you go. Very, very similar, if not almost the exact same thing, as to what DARPA was doing with PTSD and the light flashes. This compound provides a powerful new tool for researchers interested in probing the mechanisms that underlie short and long-term memory. The results appear online in Nature Communications. Individual nerve cells generally use chemical messengers to communicate with each other, and these so-called neurotransmitters are released by specialized structures called synapses at the end of the signal transmitting fiber and diffuse across the synaptic cleft, which is the narrow gap that separates nerve cells from each other. The chemical then binds to the receptor on the postsynaptic neuron, and how the postsynaptic cell reacts is dependent on the nature of the neurotransmitter and the corresponding receptor. But in this context, this so-called receptor is very special, says Laura Laprelle, a PhD student in Trotter's group and the first joint author of the new study. It is primarily responsible for the fact that we have the capacity to form memories and the ability to learn. Trotter and his colleagues have synthesized a chemical called azobenzene, which that sounds great, azobenzene triazole glutamate, which is ATG, which acts as a light-sensitive neurotransmitter on the NMDA receptors. And with the aid of this tool, it is now possible for the very first time to activate and inactivate these receptors with high specificity and precision in the laboratory, meaning they can turn on memories and turn off memories, things that you learn and store in long and short term. Yes, and let's sell it all under the guise of light-activated learning. But you know they're rubbing their evil hands together going, wow, we found out a way to get people to forget stuff very easily with this new little azobenzene triazole glutamate chemical we made. Moreover, in contrast with other optical switches, so they're calling it a switch, they're flipping more switches on and off, this time in the brain. ATG does not permanently bind to the receptors. Phew! So it could be just like a quick mind wipe and then it's all over. But diffuses freely in the synaptic cleft between pre- and postsynaptic neurons. ATG is completely inactive in the dark, Laprelle explains, and it must be exposed to light before it can bind to the receptor and initiate depolarization in the postsynaptic cell. In other words, in order to be activated, the nerve cells must first, quote, see the light. Subsequent irradiation with UV light inactivates ATG within a matter of milliseconds, thus enabling extremely precise control of receptor activation in the time domain. And I'm not going to be able to read this whole entire story, but just know that there are myriads of studies going on right now on how to turn memories on and off. And don't think that that is an accident. That's not to protect cousin Larry, who got PTSD being in Afghanistan. And it's not to help the poor 14-year-old girl who got raped while going to church by her priest. Okay. In the end, this is going to be used against people who are deemed mentally, quote unquote, mentally ill. And again, it's subjective. Who's going to be making the determination as to what is considered, quote unquote, normal? It's going to be the machine. All right. I guess we're going to end up here. Smart pill has potential to boost brain power in healthy people. Yes. So we're going to give this stuff to healthy people and see what happens. A stimulant drug successfully used in people with sleep disorders. Stay awake. What? Help. A stimulant drug successfully used to help people with sleep disorders stay awake can boost cognitive functions in healthy people, according to a new study. The smart pill has been approved by the Food and Drug Administration. Researchers reviewed 24 studies on the drug Modafinil, Modafinil, M-O-D-A-F-I-N-I-L, which was carried out between 1990 and 2015 and found that it appeared to improve cognitive function. Some of the studies also showed gains in flexible thinking, increased ability to combine information or cope with a novelty, and the drug did not seem to influence creativity either way. However, researchers found that improvement wasn't seen every time, on every test, or for every person. They also found that the studies failed to show any enhancements in the areas of attention, learning, and memory. But it made them smart. The meta-analysis was published in the European Neuropsychopharmacologically Journal, whatever that is. Wow, that's a long word. And what has emerged was that the longer and the more complex the task, the more consistently modafinil showed cognitive benefits, says Anna Catherine Brem, a neuropsychologist at Oxford and one of the paper's authors. Modafinil, like Adderall and Ritalin, is increasingly being used by college students and adults who do not suffer from ADHD or sleep disorders, but are searching for greater productivity. The drug works by increasing the brain's level of what? Oh, dopamine, ding, ding, and norepinephrine to boost concentration and alertness. It's a dopamine addiction, people. And studies have found that the numbers of adults between the ages of 26 and 34 using stimulant medications has doubled. So that's great. And dopamine, don't forget, is the addiction chemical. So we just have this population of drugged out, tweaking adults that, hey, maybe that'll prevent them from being diagnosed as schizophrenic by their smartphones of the future. All right, guys, I guess we're going to have to continue this tomorrow. That was really fast. Make sure you stick around. Ms. Lonnie Clark is up next with Age of Fusion. And we have all kinds of radio tonight. Brand new Truth on the Tracks with Brandon Turbeville. Reality Bites with Neil Foster. Our Interesting Times with Tim Kelly. Cutting Through the Matrix with Alan Watt and Live.